You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Welcome to Daddy versus Doctor. Here are your hosts, pediatrician Dr. Scott Cohen and comedian Sebastian Maniscalco.
Welcome to Daddy versus Doctor. Sebastian Maniscalco here with Dr. Scott Cohen. Getting into slang terms today. If you got teenagers out there that are coming home and you don't understand a word they're saying, maybe we could help you out today by dissecting some of the vocabulary that's being used.
Who comes up with them?
My guess, this is my guess, is the black community comes up with these terms, right? Generally speaking. Here, you get nervous already. I said black community.
I don't know. I don't know where they come from.
Like my trainer, right. He uses the word. I would say, okay, we're going to do 9 o'clock tomorrow. He goes, okay, bet. Okay. So I was like,
bet.
I never heard that before. Right. And I asked him, I go, what's bet? He goes, it's like, no problem, okay, I got it, you know, bet. Yeah. But I used one on him the other day.
Yeah.
And I go, this guy, he's a drip. He goes, what's drip? I said, like a dud.
Oh, you know? Is that a real one or you just made that up? Are you hoping to catch that on? Yeah.
No, I've been using drip since.
Because you know how kids use drip now. It's cool outfits. Have you checked out my drip?
Uh-huh. I'm sorry.
No? I thought you were just giving it multiple.
No, I'd like... drip was established years ago as a dud.
Oh.
As a drip.
Backwoods of Chicago.
Yeah, in the northwest suburbs of Illinois.
This one's a big one. Okay. I hear this a lot. Sus.
Suss it out?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not like a kid vibe.
Like suspicious. It's like sus.
Oh.
He's acting sus.
No. I thought I use it as we got a problem here with the cameras. We'll suss it out.
Oh.
Meaning we'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out.
This is he's sus.
Yeah, he's like shady. Sus.
I don't like
that's so sus. Yeah.
I believe. Yeah. And again, I think a lot of this has been either stolen from the black community, incorporated into quote unquote like white world, right? Where all these like white kids are walking around trying to be cool by using some of the terminology that the cool black people come up with, right? Again, you can't even add to this.
Because I don't even know what to say. I don't even know. Right? I mean, you're basically saying it's like Ebonics.
Yeah, it is I think a lot of the stuff that white kids are using today is filtered through the black community. But the way the black community does it is cool. If you got a teenager who's 15 going, he's sus.
It's not like her.
It don't sound right, you know?
Bet.
You got a bet on there?
No, it's a bet. Did you use that one? I'm just kidding. That's the one he just used. That's what he said. An expression of agreement or confirmation is exactly what you said about the trainer.
Okay.
There it is. Bet. Yeet. Yeet. Y-E-E-T. How come it sounds different when we say it?
Well,
it sounds like, yeah.
Go, what does it mean? Losing a sense.
All right. He yeeted the ball across the field.
Chuck.
Like you're going to chuck it. Nobody,
violent toss.
Nobody's using yeet.
Tough. Tough, vicious, tight, sick.
Yeah, which is what tough really means. It's not even slang.
Cool, attractive, or impressive. That new bike is tough.
All right, fine.
I'm not feeling that at all. Well, Harry, I have drip. Do you have any words that you use that are kind of like slang?
No. No, I can't think of anything. I'm trying to think like when I text, like what words I use. No, I use like the letter U instead of Y-O-U, R instead
yeah,
of
so you're not using.
I'm like, not using like things like simp. You know simp?
No.
He's always simping for her. Attentive or infatuated with someone. Simp. I haven't heard that one. I'm trying to think of ones that I've heard in my house. Lit. I've heard lit. The party was lit.
Yeah, I heard that. Or yeah. Fire, which is, maybe that's out of date, but that's another. Do you know what we used to call girls?
What?
When we were teenagers, we were going to go to the dance club.
Yeah.
We'd go, let's go pick up some broccoli tonight.
You call them broccoli? I think that was only you.
This is the Italian Greek community, 1989. Let's go pick up some broccoli.
Why? Because they're like grouped together?
Yeah, it's like, you know, they're in bunches at the dance club. Let's go pick up some broccoli.
I've never heard that. I think. Anybody outside your circle ever use that?
I've never heard it. Until right. I got to L.A., a friend of mine who's Italian would say broccoli. I go, you use broccoli too? Yeah, nah, use broccoli. Or brajol. Let's go get some brajol. You know, that's like tightly wrapped meat.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, this is unwoke. Unwoke times in 89. Referring to women as broccoli.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's going to be upset about that. Bussin'. Something's really good. It's bussin'.
It's not landing. I need to hear it.
IYKYK, if I gave you that abbreviation. IYKYK. I'm going to start using that one with you.
I know.
If you know, you know. I like that one. If you know, you know. IYK. I already forgot the acronym. if you know.
What about the one they no, God. Wasn't it something like FLOMO or
FOMO?
Missing
out.
Yeah, but there was another one. Oh no.
We need our listeners to send in their favorite
slang
terms and abbreviations used on. What do you write when you write text? Do you do any like abbreviations?
No, I don't use TMI, TMY. I don't use any of those.
The one I see a lot, LMAO. Laugh my ass off, right? That's what it is?
Yeah.
But I've never even said that. Like, it's like, oh, that's funny. You would never say I laughed my ass off. That became like, it's a longer acronym than what I would usually use speaking.
I've never, I'd say, I don't know, in the last, I maybe once have laughed my ass off. Once in the last 15 years.
When was that?
I was watching Giannis Pappas special.
Uh-huh.
And he had a couple lines in there that I fell off the couch laughing my ass off, where I couldn't, like, it was such a good laugh. I mean, I've laughed.
Yourself, LMAO.
I've laughed, but not like, not quite that, like that. Oh, it was like flow. Come on.
You're back on flow. Flojo. She was a... track and field star.
By the way, we're talking about views here. You know, we put some clips up of the show,
right?
And the one that got a little heat, not much, was the one that if I asked you if you were married to a Jewish woman, right, would you celebrate Christmas?
Right.
We had a guy on the show, and I don't know if I mentioned this before. Again, my memory's going. With one leg,
right? Ezra Freck.
Nobody saw it.
I know. The guy's amazing.
One leg.
I watch him now every day.
But in retrospect, you know what we should have done? You didn't see that he had one leg. If he got up here.
Right.
Right? And had the thing to show the people what he was dealing with.
Right.
It would have set the context. Or taken off the thing and put it on the fucking table.
Right.
We would have got.
Or gone to a track and we should have raced him.
Oh, God, I can't race for shit. When's the last time you sprinted at full speed.
Yeah, it's been a while. I feel like I would go so fast I'd fall over. You know what I'm saying? You know when you get to that speed where like you like as an adult, the only way to stop is just let your body fall to the ground. Yeah. I feel like that's where I am in life. I feel like I'm very fast.
I think once I get, I don't want to toot my own horn here, but I'm going to.
Yeah.
Two things I'm going to toot my own horn. Mm. Number one is when I was in high school, yeah. I was extremely fast. On the right wing, I used to be a right winger in soccer.
Oh, yeah, then you got to be fast.
And they used to lob me the ball, and I got to tell you, my speed, although unorthodox, was really good. But I want to take you back to 2 days ago.
All right, that far ago, that long ago.
Played pickleball.
Oh, okay.
With three other couples. And we were playing pickleball with two guys that are pros.
And pro pickleball.
Pro pickleball players.
I just still don't get that. But anyways, go on.
And they were very adamant about them being pros, that they led with that. Hey, my name is so-and-so.
Special gear? Like, what were they wearing? Could you tell?
I looked more of like a pro than they did as far as the dress was concerned.
Okay.
They looked very nondescript.
Got it.
And they led by saying, we're top 50 in the world. He's 40, I'm 30.
Did they used to play tennis?
Yes.
Okay.
So, I have really no mobility.
Right.
Which is perfect for pickleball doubles.
Right.
And
yeah, you just deflect.
I'm dropping. I got this slice that's really hard to return. I'm doing really good. And we're playing against the couples. Now, we play against the pros. I got one pro. The pro's on the other side with another guy. This guy couldn't return my shit. And he's pro.
The pro.
Yeah. And I told Lana, I said, you give us 6 months, we could turn pro.
You could. Totally different career path.
And this guy told me that the top pickleball player, you know what he makes a year? Just take a guess.
Pickleball?
Top pickleball.
$500,000.
$10 million.
In pickleball?
$10 million. There's money to be made in pickleball.
Wow.
And I'm going after it.
Wow. So what's special about your serve?
Obviously, it's underhand. But when I come on it, I give it a spin. So when it comes over the net, it literally drops.
I want to play you in pickleball now.
I put the pickleball courts in. We have two. So we are going to start tournaments here. Couples come over, right. Have a little margarita and whatnot.
Yeah.
And you play pickleball. But I got to tell you right now, and this is with sciatic pain ripping down my left leg. Once I get better.
That's it. And you understand the whole thing, the kitchen, the everything?
I understand the game. I know the scoring. I'm well aware. The only weakness we have right now is Lana. And I'll tell you why.
It's 50% of your team.
I'll tell you why. She's a tennis player, and she's still playing tennis.
Right.
And as soon as she adjusts to pickleball, it's over. It's over.
Right. No, and I heard that, because as a tennis player, you want to hit hard in the back, but the whole point is to get up close and little dinky shots, right?
Yeah.
Which still make sense to me, but I get it.
Yeah, we had a great time playing. So, I mean, and now we're going to get the kids involved. I think get them involved. I think I'm going to get a ping pong table this year and a foosball table.
Yeah.
I went to Utah, played foosball. And again, foosball and ping pong are my games.
Foosball, did you play in college? Like every fraternity had like a foosball table.
I played when I was 8. I had a foosball table in the basement.
You don't do no spinning. You got to, right? The proper way of foosball.
If you played
pass
me,
it?
If you, yeah.
Oh, my God.
What do you mean, oh my God?
No, I mean, you got to be expert foosball to be passing to your different lines. Most people are just spinning the
thing. No. My game is controlled. Uh-huh. It's precise. It's intentional.
You have the one where the front line, you go to the right like that real quick.
Yeah, the wrist action I got is amazing.
So we should play. I like ping pong. You're going to do an outdoor set?
Outdoor ping pong, outdoor foosball. Right. That's one of the things that we want to get this year.
I need a pool table, though. I
think a pool table's overrated.
See, I grew up playing pool. I love pool. It's very cathartic for me. Really? I love it. That's what we just played when we were back east. My father-in-law's pool table. I love it. Aubrey plays. Lexi plays. It's fun.
I just think pool's an antiquated game. I think a lot of people don't have the patience for it.
Well, it's just because you can't just pick it up like pickleball. My mystery diagnosis. We'll have to add these to the shows. I told you a little bit about Aubrey before vacation, mm-hmm. about her health scare. It's a very interesting case. So she was complaining she said cramping. She had her period, and it started like day two of her period. It was a Saturday, and just cramping pain. So that's what we thought it was. Motrin, warm packs, things like that. And then she had a soccer game Monday, and 5 o'clock. And we're at the soccer game, and we see her sitting on the bench, and didn't think anything of it. And the coach was really nice at halftime, came up to us and said, "Hey, I just want to let you know, Aubrey was supposed to start, but she warmed up and then she came over hysterically crying that she was in a lot of pain," which is not like her. She's a pretty stoic kid. And so we've asked her if she wants to go in, and she says she doesn't feel good. So we said, "No, thanks for telling us." So I went over to the bench. I said, "You okay?" She's like, "Yeah, I just took some Motrin. My cramps are really hurting me. I'm going to sit." I said, "Okay." And that's not like her also not to want to try. She must have been in a lot of pain. So then we got home. And she just didn't look right. Her coloring was off. She was complaining. I examined her. And her belly pain was sort of all over the place. It wasn't one specific spot. You think about belly pain in kids, you just always worry about the appendix, which is the right lower side. But it can start in the middle and move that way. So I was feeling, and it wasn't any place specific. It was sort of all over. She said, "All right, let's see how the night goes." And gave her Motrin, warm pack, and she slept. And the next morning I went to work and said, if she's not feeling well, just come to the office. So she skipped school. She came to the office, and now her pain was even worse. And now it was the right lower side. So now we were really worried that she had an appendicitis. We checked the CBC in the office, which is like your white blood cell count, which was actually normal, but the types of cells were more the types of cells you see with a bacterial infection. And then we checked her urine to make sure she wasn't having a urinary tract infection. She said she had some pain when she urinated a couple times. Her urine looked okay.
1 second on the urine. Yeah. When you do an analysis on urine,
yeah.
Do you take a drop of the urine mm-hmm. and put it under a microscope, or no. Do you run it through a machine?
Both. So it's a strip, and the strip tests for a bunch of things. It tests for signs of inflammation, which are called leukocytes and nitrites, blood, and it looks for kidney issues, which is protein. It looks at for sugar. It looks for your specific gravity. So you dip the strip in the urine, or you drip the urine on the strip, and you put it in a machine, and it reads it for you. You also can just look at the strip because each thing changes color, and you can just match the color to how much is in there.
When I get a urine sample.
Right.
Taken.
Right.
They say there's like a line there. Okay. Fill it up to the line.
Right. You need like drops. You don't need a full
why are
cup.
We why are we have you ever used the entire sample of urine going fuck I'm out of urine?
No. I remember going to my pediatrician and walking down the hall and the urine like spilling out of the cup. No. I mean you literally need I could drop and do 8 drops of urine and get my thing. But you need more. Not a full cup. You need a little more if you're going to send it for like a urinary tract infection to the lab where they run it on a plate. So you need more sample. Do you need a full cup? No.
So generally speaking, the urine that you're providing is far more than
you're dumping most of it.
They need. Okay.
Yeah, they're dumping most of it.
Okay. So I'm sorry.
So anyway, so the next step to rule out an appendicitis is an ultrasound. So they do an ultrasound. The problem with the ultrasound, even though it's the standard of care for appendicitis, most places can't visualize the appendix on the ultrasound, and then you're stuck with a clinical exam or you have to do a CT scan. So you can't just get ultrasounds. You know, you just can't call and get an ultrasound. Really, the only place to get it immediately is the emergency department. So I was fortunate at Cedars, the person that was running the emergency room that afternoon is somebody who I actually take care of his kids and I have a relationship with. I worked at Children's Hospital Los Angeles with them. So he said, Scott, send Aubrey over and I'll check her in and we'll get the ultrasound. So the ultrasound didn't show any signs of an appendicitis. They look for signs of inflammation and fluid, but it also didn't visualize the appendix, which sort of leaves you, I don't know. And then we had the surgeon who makes the call come down and examine her. And at that time, she was feeling a little better. So they said, listen, I think you could just monitor it. Just see what happens. But that's not definitive. And if it doesn't get better in the next couple of days, you're going to be back in the emergency department. So the only definitive thing was a CT scan. So we did a CT scan. And what ended up that she had, thankfully, because an appendicitis, the only way to fix it is you go to surgery. And I was, if you had asked me that afternoon, I was expecting to stay there and get surgery. She had something called mesenteric adenitis. Have you ever heard that term before? No. So mesenteric adenitis is actually just inflammation of the lymph nodes in your intestines, and it's caused by a virus. But it mimics an appendicitis. It gives you just as severe belly pain, often the right lower quadrant as that. But because it's a virus, there's no treatment. And we actually did a respiratory viral panel on her, and she had a virus that causes the common cold, enterovirus or rhinovirus, two different viruses. The test can't distinguish between the two. And her sister, Lexi, the day before had cold symptoms. So in Lexi, it manifested as a cold. In Aubrey, it manifested as this thing called mesenteric adenitis. So it took a couple days, Motrin, she rested, and then it got better. But it was really, really a scary experience because we thought we were going to surgery that night.
You bring up a couple points in your story that I want to touch upon, and it's reflective in my own mother's experience at the hospital.
Yeah.
She went to the emergency room. First of all, she went to urgent care. She was having some stomach issues, yeah. Right? Went to urgent care. By the way, urgent care doesn't even sound like you're going to get any care at all.
Or that it's urgent.
Yeah. I feel like you go to an urgent care, it's like doctors who couldn't make it in hospitals, yeah. Or they failed and they got like C's. So they go, just go to the urgent care. So she went to urgent care. They sent her to the emergency room or the hospital, right? Now, I haven't been in an emergency room, knock on wood, but my sister was there with my mother. They said it was like a nightclub in the emergency room.
I would say more like a war zone.
That too. I mean, like once they got in there, they're mopping up, you know, blood from the whatever came in. And my sister couldn't go in with my mother into the emergency room. Yeah. But I feel when a lot of these people are using the emergency room as their primary care physician, sure. Right?
Yeah.
They get a cough, they go to the emergency room, right?
They'd rather wait 6 hours to be seen by somebody to tell them the cough is because they don't have primary care physicians. You're right.
So they're over flooding the hospital for what I believe.
Not are true emergencies.
That, yeah.
100%.
Let's just not call it the emergency room anymore. Let's just call it a general facility where you come in and they're going to tell you take two Tylenol and go to bed, right? So, and can you tell me why at the emergency room, people are coming with 7 family members?
Right. Well, they limit it now. But you're right. I mean,
packed.
It's packed. It was packed. I mean, there were people not in just rooms. There were people, like you said, on gurneys in the hallways.
Yeah.
I mean, everywhere. And you're right. We need to do better. You know, the whole point with the emergency room, everything's triage, right? So your true emergencies, the gunshot wounds, the car accidents, they're going to bypass right past the general population that's there just to see a doctor. And that's why wait times are long. But to your point, I mean, it was an interesting discussion with me and my daughter. Here I am. I know everybody there. I know the person running the show in the emergency room. I personally called the surgeon. I personally called the radiologist. I'm helping run the orders and things like that. And we were there over 6 hours.
Yeah.
Right? So imagine if I didn't know anybody. Oh, we would have been there all day for probably the same result. And it's a hard thing with medicine because it is difficult. It's why people are get upset. You know, why aren't I getting care right now? Why aren't you helping me? When we forget about everything that's happening around. The doctors are also overworked. There's a huge volume of patients. There's a lot of illness, especially in the wintertime. And then emergencies get bypassed because it really shouldn't be used as a primary care facility.
Is there a way, you say gunshot wounds, mm-hmm. heart attacks, you bypass everybody, right? Is there enough? If you took an ambulance there.
Not necessarily.
Because like, I feel like if you...
Right, if you had a sore throat and you called an ambulance, you'd get there, they'd see that you're not dying, you get triaged, and you would still wait.
If you come in an ambulance...
Yeah. You'll get put in a
room.
You're
paying for like... I feel like you're paying for like getting to the head of the line. Right?
You'll
like
probably get put in a room quicker. Once they see that you're not sick, then it's everything's going to slow down. Interestingly, if you ask Aubrey about her...
Hold on. Yeah. Hold on. Let me... Before you even get into this, you call an ambulance to the house.
Right.
Isn't that the same thing as going to the emergency room, but they come to your front door?
You're using resources you don't need and shouldn't use. But then once you get there, they're not going to continue those services.
Well, you might not even have to go.
Right.
If you think you got something wrong with you,
right.
you call an ambulance, yeah. right? They come
yeah.
and they go, it's a cold.
Right.
Yeah. Thanks for that. Send me to
No. Because once that's not their job to make a diagnosis, they're going to be like, if you're complaining of belly pain or a cough or shortness of breath, they're going to.
But
they're
don't
just
they do? The,
take,
don't they
you
know, do the tests?
They're
going to
do vitals. They'll do some of the vitals. They'll do the same thing the emergency room does when they triage you. They'll do vitals and really say, is there something serious? But then, if you choose not to go, you're basically signing off. It's against. You know, their job is to pick you up and take you there. And if you then say, I'm not going, that's on you.
Oh, so you could decline your own ambulance?
You could. This is not how you should be using resources.
I understand that. But yes. I feel like if you come to the hospital in an ambulance, I just feel like, fuck it. You know, like
it's like your limo. It's like your limo service in Vegas.
I paid extra to get to the...
They're not, they don't work that way.
Does your insurance charge you? Obviously,
you're gonna get paid for the ambulance trip.
For an ambulance.
Oh yeah, big time.
But is it covered or is it an out-of-pocket expense? I don't even know how the insurance fucking system works.
Right. Some of it just depends on your insurance plan.
I got no insurance.
Yeah, you're gonna pay a lot of money.
I call 911.
You're gonna pay for that.
The ambulance comes. Mm-hmm. I go to the emergency room. They say, "Oh, you know what it was? It was you had a." I don't know. Heartburn.
Right.
They send you a bill.
Yeah, it's going to be thousands of dollars.
That person makes $8 an hour.
You're going to go on a payment plan for the rest of your life.
Yeah, but no one's going to pay that bill. No one's going to pay the bill. They're going to buy an iPhone
right.
before they pay the
ambulance
fee.
That's why they have other types of insurance that the government gives you, right? Obamacare, Medi-Cal, things like that, to cover people who can't afford to pay for their own insurance.
Couldn't you make insurance I just... out of pocket? Like, how much is it?
That's what you're paying for. You're paying your premiums monthly to get certain amount of coverage, right? So there are insurance plans where you pay a lot monthly, where your insurance covers more of what you get charged for, and you pay less monthly, you have to pay a larger percentage of your medical fees. On a tiered system.
Okay, but you go to the hospital.
Yeah.
Your kid needs Tylenol. Mm-hmm. And then you get the bill, Tylenol, $34.
Right.
Why is it $34?
You're right.
When you bought a bottle.
Right.
And it should be.
100%.
It should be 98 cents for the Tylenol.
So it's like, why is a screw for NASA cost $1,000, right? When you can go to Home Depot and pay 30 cents for it. In these cases, unfortunately, the prices are elevated to maximize insurance reimbursement. So it's
all. But why doesn't the insurance just pay you for the 98 cent Tylenol?
Well, because there's overhead costs, right? You have to pay rent. You have to pay for all the people that work there. You have to pay for storage. You have to pay for all those things. So they're basically, the insurance company is actually the one that deems how much, not how much you're allowed to charge, but how much you're going to get. When you bring Serafina in for a cold, I could charge you $1 million. But if I'm under contract from your insurance company. Your insurance company tells me, actually, your service is only worth $75. That's all they're going to pay me. What percentage of the $75 they pay versus what you pay is based on the plan that you have. So they may say, hey, you saw her for a cold and that code is worth $75. Sebastian has a deductible of $15. So you pay $15, the insurance company pays $60, and I made $75. It doesn't matter what I billed. Everything else is totally
made up.
So why
are you even sending a bill if they're going to give you a set amount?
Because the bill is for two reasons. One, it's for the people that don't have insurance. It's what I truly feel that service is worth. So if I'm charging, I'm not charging $1 million, but yeah. I may charge $150. So I feel my service is worth $150.
Okay. You send that bill to the people that don't have insurance.
Right. So those, right, the people who don't have insurance pay me the $150. Okay. The people that I'm under contract with insurance says that's only worth $75. I can only make $75.
Okay.
I can't balance bill, meaning I can't say, but I think it's worth $150. Insurance gave me $75. You owe me the other $75. You're not allowed to do that. That's called balance billing. You're not allowed to do that because I'm under contract to take the insurance. Why do people take insurance? The idea is to get a larger volume of patient population because there's less percentage of people who will pay people out of pocket, right? That's the whole game. And the reason why these numbers are made up, like you have a baby born in the neonatal intensive care unit who's there for 3 months, patients will get bills for millions of dollars. When the insurance company isn't paying them $1 million, you're not paying them. It's to maximize the amount the insurance company is going to pay. So you charge whatever, $34 for Tylenol to get the maximum amount that the insurance company is going to pay you for the Tylenol because you don't know necessarily what those numbers are. So they are there. It's right. It's a poor system.
Poor system.
Because we should charge what things are worth. But what happened was in the '70s, everything in medicine was fee for service. Right? I said, my visit's worth $150. You're going to pay me $150. So what happened historically is that there was a percentage of doctors, probably a very small percentage, that took advantage of the system, and said, well, hey, I get to charge whatever I want, and that's the only thing that's out there, so I'm going to keep raising those rates. So then what happened was insurance companies came in and said, huh, we're going to fix that system. But then the system moved too far the other way. Now it's all the insurance-based system, and this is why you'll never see a doctor's name on a high-rise building. You'll see insurance companies. They're making tons of money off of it and move too far the way. So we have to move it back somewhere in between the insurance and the fee for service where we're charging what things are worth and the services that are provided, but we're not gouging the system and we're also not just paying insurance companies for it.
I feel there should be a bouncer at the front door at an emergency room and a line waiting to get in. And the guy's got a clipboard. Yeah. Hey, what's your problem? I got a stomachache. Well, what do you mean stomachache? Yeah. And then you go, if this is what you tell them, and this is what I want to also happen in the legal system. If you come in, and if they have appendicitis or your liver busted, you're gonna pay for the whole fucking thing.
But that's what they're doing.
And then you can see how fast the stomachache goes away.
I know. But here's the thing. But the thing is, that's what they're doing in triage. They're deciding who comes in and who waits in the waiting room. And the people that are waiting in the waiting room, right, may just have a stomach bug or a virus that a doctor has to diagnose, but they're going to wait a really long time. If you ask Aubrey, what was the worst experience about being there for 6 hours? It wasn't the scans. It wasn't getting her blood drawn. It wasn't getting an IV. It was when she was sitting in the waiting room and the woman next to her was vomiting violently the entire time she was out there. Yeah. She goes, Daddy, that was so scary. I was sitting there and the woman literally, I could touch her, was vomiting nonstop. That was the scariest part of the whole experience.
That's why you put in an outside courtyard where you could hang out.
Where you mingle. You mingle.
They should have it sectioned off based on, oh, you're vomiting? You go over there. Headache? Over there. Stomach ache? You can't put a vomit next to a person who's got a cut on their finger.
That's why we try not to send small babies to the emergency room because it's more likely they get sick or get something worse from actually the emergency room than what they're going in for. Like when people call me with a fever, unless they're a certain age where they have to go, you don't want to go there if you don't need to be there.
I agree, and I feel sorry for the people that are working there, overworked, understaffed, overwhelmed with a bunch of fucking, problems that probably could be solved.
You know, but there's not enough, like you said, they don't know, you don't know what you don't know. So you're there to get a lot of primary care things fixed and not true emergencies, right? The true emergencies in the emergency room, you're right, are extremely, extremely small percentage.
I want to know, has anybody ever died in the waiting room of an emergency room?
I'm sure it's happened. No, not on purpose. But like, I'm sure it's
no.
Happened.
But like, yeah, it's not a gunshot room. You wait. Next thing you know, they go out and they go, "Mr. Johnson, you're ready," and he's laid out, gone.
Yeah. In your system, he's out on the football field. The system needs work. I think they do the best.
Okay. What happens? Is there an alternative other than having your own medical staff on a payroll? Yeah.
I mean, there are private emergency departments that open up where people pay out of pocket and it's more streamlined and there's smaller volume. You know, I think with any area of business, when things start off, they tend to work really well because your volume is small, right? Anybody, no matter what it is, if the volume is small, you can handle it. But as ideas get better and businesses improve and become, you know, a better business, you get larger volume, it's harder to continue that great of a service with the larger volume. I remember when we started in practice, right? And you could get any appointment time that you wanted. People could walk in. You had unlimited time with patients. As soon as you become a popular practice, thankfully, and you get more volume, and now people have to wait to be seen. Now you have to wait for an appointment. The people who remember the olden days are the ones that complain, "Oh, we liked it better." But how do you have both? How do you have a successful business but maintain still that feeling of like you have all the time in the world? It's almost impossible.
Yeah, I this goes back to, you know, insurance, medical care. Should you be able to get it from the government or should you pay out of pocket? Now, from my own experience, medical care, I think we touched on this in an earlier episode. I came out here, I left the United Airlines Employees Credit Union, and I left my job at the restaurant, and I came out here on a COBRA plan. Now, the COBRA is a plan of insurance used to, it's like gap insurance between one job to the other.
From one to the next, right? Yep.
Well, I was on COBRA, and COBRA was, it was like rent COBRA. You know, that was I need a place to live, and I need medical insurance just in case I lose a leg,
right?
Or I get decapitated or what.
You felt it was a necessity like shelter.
Yeah.
Not.
It wasn't a given. 10th, 11th on the list of expenses. Right. Right. So you run into this whole, oh, I deserve health insurance because this is my God-given right. I should, if I have a heart attack, someone, I should be covered.
Right.
Right. And my response is, yeah, I understand that. However, if you made it part of your budget and it was affordable.
Right. Like your cell phone or anything like that. Right.
Why wouldn't it be the responsibility?
But it would have to be affordable. Right. I think the system ends up tiering itself, unfortunately, because I would love to believe that no matter where you go and no matter what doctor you see, you're seeing somebody who's good at their profession. But what ends up happening is if you're somebody who gets your insurance for free, there's only a certain subset of doctors that you can see. And if you pay for a more expensive insurance, like a PPO insurance, there's a certain subset of doctors that see you. If you don't want insurance and you're going to have fee for service, there's going to be a subset of doctors you see you. I would love to believe the doctors are all the same.
Let me ask you this. If you're a doctor and you're seeing freebies, right? You're not that good, right?
No, see, but I don't think that's the case.
Hold on, 1 second.
I think it's just a different business model.
Is the way the medical system is set up for doctors, is it similar to the NCAA and NBA?
Right.
If you ever work with a doctor in your office and you go to them, where were you before this? And they're like, I was in downtown LA working at the city hospital, and now I woke. Is there like a breeding ground that doctors go to?
No, not the way you're thinking of it. There are a lot of doctors who do HMO care and government health care.
Yeah.
Are some of the best doctors. That's what they chose as their profession. That's the population they want to see. That's what they love doing.
I've never heard of that. Somebody from Beverly Hills going, I'm going to go down to the unbelievable doctor at the city hospital.
I think it's...
All the doctors are working at the best of the hospitals.
Yeah, no,
best doctors,
But think about the hospitals, Children's Hospital Los Angeles. Most of the academic children's hospitals are hospitals that see a subset of the population that are exactly what you're talking about, that are getting free insurance or government-based insurance or those type of plans. And those are some of the best doctors in the world. They're not private practice doctors. They're not going out, right, and opening a private clinic in Beverly Hills, but that doesn't make them any less.
I'm talking if you go to a low-income area and the hospital that services that low-income area, you're telling me the doctors that work at that hospital are the same at the Cedars-Sinai?
It depends where. A lot of the major cities that you're talking about, those hospitals actually have some of the best doctors. But it's just, you're right, access. It's true.
Okay. I'll
a county hospital. I mean, you don't have to be in Westwood or Beverly Hills. We know those doctors because that's where we work, but some of the best doctors are in larger facilities.
Okay, you would know more than I would. I would just think that it's like a farm system to get to the better hospitals. So they put you and you work at this hospital until you get up, till you get your experience up, and then we can come take you at Cedars-Sinai.
No, it doesn't work like that. Right. But I think some hospitals are definitely more attractive than others, right? Work-life balance, things like that. And then, there are only certain doctors. It takes a lot to go into, I think,
Hold on, I'm sorry. Why do people, when they're going in an ambulance, they go, fuck, we got to take you to city. And then they take you to the city, and as soon as you transfer out of there, right? Because you're like a hellhole.
Right. It depends where the doctors that you need, the specialists you need are. I think a lot of that depends.
Is he being diplomatic?
No.
Do you guys think that the city hospital, just on what you know as like an everyday guy walking around, if someone goes, we're going to take you to city, and you go, what? No, we're going to take you to city hospital. And you're like, no, it's like Cedars-Sinai open? Don't you get nervous?
It depends what you need.
Don't you get nervous?
It's a little more nuanced than what you're saying, but I there are definitely good doctors and bad doctors in different places.
Got it.
But I think facilities, they're definitely nicer facilities. And a lot of them are the newer, less volume-based facilities, right? That's the hard thing about medicine. If you choose to be in a practice where you take, this is what insurance does to you as a doctor. If you are a HMO-based practice only, which means some of the reimbursement is you're getting low reimbursement. How do you run a business and get lower reimbursement? You have to make it up in volume, right? Which means my visits can't be 30 minutes an appointment. They have to drop down to 10 to 15 because the only way I can pay my overhead is see more volume. That definitely affects the medicine I'm practicing. I don't think that's good medicine running a mill. If you are a fee-for-service doctor, you can charge much more and see a patient an hour. Yes, is that better care? The more time you can spend, but there you can do an in-between. I feel like we do an in-between. We have a large volume practice, but we're able to spend time with them because we actually take more of a PPO-based practice, which does reimburse more. So that allows us, why do we do that? To put it in our pocket? No, it allows us to practice medicine the way we want to practice and do the tests on, like we do the vision screens and all the fun and fancy tests that help diagnose things. We want to be able to provide those to patients, which we wouldn't be able to do in a different environment. I think that's what it is.
Bottom line.
Yeah.
Where do the doctors go that aren't good?
Cedars-Sinai.
Like, what makes a good doctor?
Yeah. I think every specialty...
You're also studying the same thing.
I know.
You come out, One guy, what does he leave? Does he do open heart surgery and leave something in there and sews it up? And go, fuck! No, I forgot the fork.
I think training and experience have a lot to do with it. So I think that's true, right? Like going to certain schools versus other schools, and the length of training, the people who you're surrounded by, the institutions that. I mean, it's so multifactorial, and I think every specialty has certain people. But you're right. If your daughter is getting heart surgery, right? What are you going to do? You're going to start asking around who is the top heart surgeon for pediatrics in the world. And they're going to only give you three names. One of them happens to be at Children's Hospital Los Angeles, a Dr. Starnes, right? That he does cardiothoracic surgery. You're going to want to go to that person with that reputation. I agree with you. Now, could any pediatric cardiothoracic surgeon do it? Absolutely. But you as the parent are going to pick the person with the most experience, the most number of cases, the most.
Okay, you bring up the Children's Hospital. That's privately funded, right? Where are they getting the money to operate?
Donations. But government also, too, and insurance, all those things.
Okay,
it's not purely private. No, not at all.
Well, it's more donations than, say, a city hospital, which is funded primarily by what?
I guess they get more donations than something like that, yes.
Like
how much that subsidizes it, I don't know.
A city hospital is financed by what?
Probably the government.
The government.
Right.
Okay.
And right, the funds.
And Cedars-Sinai is not?
I'm sure they're getting something from that. I think there's lots of different revenue sources, but you're right. Some of those hospitals are getting more. You know, it's like the public schools that the parents donate more to, right? They're able to provide more than a public school that's only getting funds from the government because they don't have the funds to pay for teachers and supplies and things like that. Okay. So I think the same works for hospitals. I think you're exactly right.
Okay, so
if you're able to subsidize.
Now I can make this a little bit more clear in my head. It's like schools. So not to say that the public school system does not have great teachers, because they do.
Exactly.
They just happen to be working in areas that don't have enough resources.
Exactly.
Gotcha. Okay.
I think that's a good analogy.
All right. Wow. Heated discussion here today.
That's great. You know, that's like an important episode, I think. A lot of people have questions about the business side of it. Mm-hmm. Like what's actually going on with who's getting money from what, and the fact that there's like 11 things happening at the same time is really tricky for people.
Yeah.
People are really concerned about slang.
Yeah, well, that too. I don't know how we moved in from
yeet something off that table.
From yeet to so there you have it today. I hope you enjoyed our discussion here on hospitals, insurance, and the like, and slang terms. We will be back next week talking about more fun things about pediatrics, the medical
world,
and our families.
The opinions expressed in this program are not intended as professional medical advice, as a diagnosis, as a treatment protocol, or as a substitute for professional medical advice from your physician. Please consider your own medical history and consult with your own physician for your specific healthcare and/or medical needs, and about your concerns for yourself and your family.